Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb, Text Number 50. Deva Sura Manushova, Yaksho Gandharva Evadva, Bhajan Mukunda Charanam, Shastiman Syadhyatavayam, Deva, a demigod, Asura, a demon, Manushaha, a human being, Va, or Yaksha, a yaksha, a member of a demoniac species, Gandharva, a Gandharva, Eva, indeed, Va, or Bhajan, rendering service, Mukunda Charanam, to the lotus feet of Mukunda, Lord Krishna, who can give liberation, Swastiman, full of all auspiciousness, Sdyat becomes Yata, just as Vayam, we, Prahlad Maharaj. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. If a demigod, demon, human being, yaksha, gandharva, or anyone within this universe renders service to the lotus feet of Mukunda, who can deliver liberation, he is actually situated in the most auspicious condition of life, exactly like us, the Mahajans, headed by Prahlad Maharaj. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj, by his living example, requested his friends to engage in devotional service, whether in demigod society, asura society, human society, or Gandharva society. Every living entity should take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda and thus become perfect in good fortune. I'll read the next text. Translation, my dear friends, O sons of the demons, you cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by becoming perfect brahmanas, demigods or great saints, or by becoming perfectly good in etiquette or vast learning. None of these qualifications can awaken the pleasure of the Lord, nor by charity, austerity, sacrifice, cleanliness, or vows can one satisfy the Lord. The Lord is pleased only if one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything is simply a show. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj concludes that one can become perfect by serving the Supreme Lord sincerely by all means. Material elevation to life as a Brahmin, demigod, rishi, and so on are not causes for developing love of Godhead. But if one sincerely engages in the service of the Lord, his Krishna consciousness is complete. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:30. Pichet Siddharacharo Bhajante Mamananyabhak Sadoreva Samantavya Samyagvayastito Hisaha. Even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is considered saintly because he is properly situated. To develop unalloyed love for Krishna is the perfection of life. Other processes may be helpful, but if one does not develop his love for Krishna, these other processes are simply a waste of time. Dharmak swanusti tak pum sam vishvaksena katasuyat no padya yati ratim shrama eva hi kevalam. Duties, dharma, executed by men regardless of occupation are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. The Bhagavatam 1:2:8. Test of perfection is one's unalloyed devotion to the Lord. And the nectar of devotion describes different stages of devotional service. Three stages. Devotional service executed up to the stage of bhava, which is known as sadhana bhakti, and has two different aspects. One of them, as we've heard many times, is kleshagni. That is, it frees one from all material suffering. This material suffering is caused basically by ignorance. Ignorance will automatically create anxiety, and anxiety is suffering. Because if we don't know where we're going after we leave this body, then we might consider it, we might go to a place we don't want to go. There's no guarantee that after we leave this body, there'll be a big kirtan when we arrive, wherever we're going, with a big feast in our honor, and everyone to wash our feet and offer us riches and say, why don't you stay here forever so we can worship you? That Bharat Maharaj, he became a deer. And he was much more elevated than we can imagine. Similarly, Yudhisthira Maharaj had to go to hell. So there's no guarantee that our next destination is going to be necessarily in Vaikuntha. It might be, that's what we're practicing for. But unless we know where we're going, we're definitely going to be in some anxiety at least. What's going to happen to me? Just like now we're in anxiety, what's going to happen to my body? Well, the Bhagavatam says either it'll be eaten by jackals and vultures, or it'll be eaten by the moths and the ants and turned into stool. Well, actually, if it's eaten by the vultures and the the jackals, it'll be turned into stool. And if it's eaten by the moths and by the ants, what will it turn into? I guess dust or something. What's that? Dirt. Dirt. Yeah, I guess it's dirt. We haven't opened up a casket lately, so we can't tell. But it's definitely not the same as when you put it in there. And then if it's burnt, then it turns into ashes. That beautiful body that everyone was saying, oh, you look so healthy. What happened to you? You're not eating enough. So that's what's going to happen to the body. Now the question is where we're going to go and why we're going to go there. So this is what the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita answers. Now people reject the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. What other answer do they have? Oh, that's not true. That we're not, you know, there's no such thing as heaven. There's no such thing as hell. There's no Gandharvas. There's no sages. There's nothing. Then they have, all they're doing is trading in a possibility for anxiety. At least we have some hope. Everyone else has absolutely no hope. Of course, some people may think, as they said yesterday, that when you die, they put you in the casket, the ants and the other insects, they eat you, you turn into whatever, dirt, and then the Lord comes back the bones rise up from the casket, if it's not too old. They haven't eaten the bones also. And you're then the kirtan of the bones. Not very exciting. You go to heaven and your mother looks at you, wow, you haven't eaten in a long time. You're not even skin and bones, you're just bones. What happened? Or as many other conceptions of what happens, you merge into nothingness, and you come back to the original nothing, you meet Mother Nothing there. You've been away for a long time, Mother Nothing says. Yeah. What'd you do? Well, it doesn't matter because it was for nothing. So at least we have some hope. Now the question is, how are we actually going to find out how to make our destination in such a way as it's going to be auspicious. We may not be 100% clear what exactly our destination is, but at least we can find out what to do to make our destination auspicious. We may know where we want to go, and we if we have a car, then we make the car, we test the car, we take it to the mechanic, we put in the oil, the gas, everything. So when it's time to leave on our destination, then we're ready to do it. If you let the car deteriorate, you drive into a wall once in a while, just to test the wall to see how strong it is. And then it's time to leave on your journey, and lo and behold, the car doesn't work. You have to get towed away. So, what is the process? The process is hearing the Bhagavatam. But just not hearing the Bhagavatam, because anyone can hear the Bhagavatam and get absolutely, practically no benefit from hearing the Bhagavatam. We can find out what happens in the Bhagavatam and get exactly the wrong idea. We can hear people sometimes, they jump to the 10th canto and they hear how Krishna is killing this demon, that demon, and they think, well, this is these people's God and all he's doing is killing people. What kind of God is that? Just like I mentioned, that we had a court case in California. California is famous for court cases. And the leader supposedly, or someone had kidnapped some lady. Of course they didn't kidnap her, but she left her family and she was underage and her father died from supposedly heartbreak or whatever. And so there's a court case. And in the court case, they brought in a picture of Lord Nrisimhadev, the other side. And there was one of our leaders doing testimony, and he asked the leader of the Hare Krishna movement, who is this half man, half lion? Who is this lion? Actually, I don't even know if they knew it was a half man, half lion, but who is this? Who is this? And he said, it's Nrisimhadev. Oh, is that your God? Anyhow, the devotee kind of wasn't so direct. He said, and who's this? This is Prahlad Maharaj. And who's this? This is Hiranyakashipu. And what's the relationship between Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad? Well, they're father and son. So here we find that your God is killing this boy's father, and this boy is so brainwashed that he's offering a garland to the killer. So this is what you're doing to your followers. You're brainwashing them. So if someone comes and kills their father, then they offer him a garland. So this actually happened. Prahlad actually offered Nrisimhadev, at least in our picture, a garland. And Nrisimhadev was killing his father. So they know what's happening, we can't deny it, but they don't have any perspective. So knowledge in itself is misleading. One has to get the proper perspective. You have to know why Nrisimhadev was killing Hiranyakashipu. We have to know why Prahlad was offering a garland. So to know something is not enough, we have to know why something happened. So therefore we have commentaries. Otherwise people read Bhagavatam without a commentary, and it appears that Krishna is a thief. He's a thief. When he gets caught, he does all kinds of mischief. Pinches the babies and makes them cry. He's just, what kind of God is this? And Krishna is not only a thief, he's a killer. And his parents were criminals. He was born in a jail. Just by good luck, he escaped. But he even went to this peaceful village called Vrindavan, and he organized a mafia there when he grew up. They're just stealing, like, everything. No one was safe. Their homes, they didn't have any locks in their doors, so they broke in all the time. They just stole their butter, everything they could. Any animal that came to the village, he killed a horse. He killed a bull, he killed a calf. I mean, he was really vicious. Even some wind came by and he tried to destroy it. Even a lady came by, tried to give him some milk, he killed her. So we not only have to know what happened, we have to know why it happened. Otherwise, we'll be seriously misled. Therefore, we have acharyas giving an explanation of what's happening so we can understand. And we have to know it so deeply that we become convinced that it's true, 100% true. Now, faith is something that you might believe, but conviction is something you will die for. Just like Ambarish Maharaj. He was confronted by Durvasa Muni because Durvasa Muni found some problem in Ambarish Maharaj's reception of him and his followers. So he pulled out a hair from his head because he was a great mystic yogi. He turned into a fiery demon who tried to kill Ambarish. But because Ambarish Maharaj was so fixed in Krishna consciousness, he was so convinced that Krishna is his protector that although tears came from his eyes, but they were tears of ecstasy because he was concentrating on Krishna. And of course, Krishna, we know he threw his Sudarshan chakra, and which went after Devasa, burnt the fiery demon to ashes, and then went after Devasa Muni. So that's called conviction. Prahlad Maharaj was convinced when his father asked him, what is the best thing you've learned in school? He said, the best thing I've learned in school, my dear father, is that you're the number one fool. Now, anyone in the right mind, if your father asks, you come home from school one day, and your father asks you, what's the best thing you've learned in school? And you say, the best thing I've learned in school, my dear father, is that you're a fool. What will your father think? What are you trying to do? Start a fight or something? And so you think I'm a fool, so what do you think I should do? Should I go to school? No, you should go into the forest.
You should go to the forest, Vrindavan.
So that's conviction. Be able to tell even to the person who might appreciate it. Question, an important question, and you give them the right answer. Because you're convinced. And by conviction, then one can actually, with determination, do something and develop some skill, some expertise. When one has transcendental discrimination, one can also have transcendental expertise, especially, as I said many times, in the loving relationships. If we want to develop skill, repairing cars is nice, repairing computers, knowing programs like Excel or whatever, knowing how to dance nicely is good, or sing, or memorize verses. But the real skill is in loving relationships with Krishna and his devotees. That skill will bring all the other skills. And even if you don't know how to even read or write, if you have that skill, then your life is perfect. If we have that skill, like Kishore Das Babaji, he didn't even know how to sign his name. But because he was in love with God, his life, he had Krishna Prema, therefore his life is perfect, and all his dealings with everyone else was perfect. So that skill we want to do is how to expertly relate to everyone we meet in such a way as that we inspire them to take up the process of Krishna consciousness or further their advancement in Krishna consciousness. That's the ultimate skill. And by developing that skill, then Krishna says, the dami buddhi yogam tam. Then I give you the understanding by which you can come to me. I develop you become an instrument. Nimitra matram bhavasavasachin. You become just like me. I put you under the internal energy, daivi prakriti mashritya, and you develop the same character as myself and the residents of Vrindavan. So that's the perfection of life. Practicing loving exchanges, then Krishna gives the intelligence how to exchange love even more deeply, more consistently, more profoundly,
And the result is that one develops the character of a pure devotee, and one is always absorbed in love of God, remembering Krishna and his wonderful pastimes with his associates. Because if you want to enter into fire, you have to become like fire. So if you want to enter into water, you have to become like water. So if we want to enter into the pastimes of Krishna with his devotees, we want to become one of his devotees, we have to practice in this world the loving exchanges, because that's all that goes on in the spiritual world. Then one's life will become perfect. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes. So again, there is knowledge, there's perspective, there's conviction, there's skill, and then there's character. And our aim is character. Yes.
In commentary, the verse says that she left replica of her body.
Who? Here.
Chaitanya's first wife, Lakshmi.
Lakshmi Devi.
Yeah. And then there in comment of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he says that Krishna is actually, if I understood right, that's why I'm asking, because I don't know, that he actually doesn't have desire to kill these demons, and that he doesn't kill them, but it's something like Vishvarupa or some material.
No, it's not exactly. When Krishna comes, all his expansions come with him. They all come with him. And when the demons have to be killed, then that aspect of Krishna, that particular expansion of Krishna, kills the demon. Krishna is not really so much aware the demon is being killed. Krishna is always in the same mood, loving mood. So, but he expands in order to, so that a particular expansion of him can do the killing. Now, even the expansion has to do the killing, but he doesn't do it out of animosity. It's the consciousness of Krishna, just like a child. Sometimes is naughty, so the father has to chastise the child for the benefit of the child. So all the expansions are not different from Krishna. So we can't say, well, Krishna didn't do it, is his expansion. No, it's still Krishna. But Krishna is, in his original form, he's always in the same mood. He never changes his mood. But his expansions, the part of Krishna's consciousness, which is there in order to help his servants make spiritual advancement, kills the demon. So Krishna, in his original form, is never disturbed. And his different aspects, his different expansions, they do these things. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is. I believe it.
Yeah, anyhow, don't take my word for it. Yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he can. He knows everything. He can be my witness. Or even any one of those five, they know more than I do. By yeah, experience.
I didn't understood quite when I was reading it, that's why I asked.
Okay, good. Anything else?
You said Yudhishthir has to go to hell?
He saw hell.
Oh, okay.
Because the commentators say, because he wouldn't lie for Krishna. Therefore, anyhow, there's different commentaries, but that's one of the commentaries. Therefore, he had to see hell. It's not that he spent a whole lot of time there, but he had to see it. When Krishna told him to shout out that Ashvatthama is dead to Dronacharya, so that Dronacharya would become weakened and that someone could kill him, he refused to do it. He said, how can I tell a lie? I've never told a lie in my life. So because he hesitated to tell a lie when Krishna asked him to do so, therefore his chariot, which was always above the ground, dropped down to the floor. And then at that time, well, and then after he left his body, because of that offense, he had to see hell temporarily, shortly. Anything else? Rukram,
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was inspired when you said in lecture that we should understand why something going on. And I see in Srimad Bhagavatam we have story where kings just go on some kind of vanaprastha forest, practically in the middle of night, without say a word to the family, anything, just left home. And probably I think according to that, I know so many cases when devotees just without to say a word to the family go to be brahmacharis in temple. And
not probably, so many around here.
Sorry?
There's not so many brahmacharis here.
I heard story about that.
Yeah.
When I was brahmachari in Sarajevo, I do similar things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're inspired by the other brahmacharis.
Yes. And normally their family can think that son or daughter are little or brain, you know, after that.
What?
Brainwashing. Okay.
Well, that's after good. That. If you have a clean brain, then you can think
that. Yeah. And, okay. Why? I didn't understand. I don't understand why kings in Srimad Bhagavatam stories.
Kings.
Sorry.
Especially kings like...
Special kings, yeah.
Like Venu.
Vanaprastaya without... Why they didn't say anything to the family, just to go, that nobody know what's going on with them.
There are varieties of stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not that everyone just got up and left their family. That was... And besides, they generally didn't leave it. They left at a certain age. Generally, the kings retired at a certain age, went to the forest, because that's called vanaprastha. The perfection of household life, of performing dhamma, and yajna, had a sense in utilizing your senses in Krishna's service, performing sacrifice for Krishna, and giving charity in Krishna consciousness. The perfection of that is you become Krishna conscious, more Krishna conscious. And in order to further your perfection, you go into the forest where you give up external things so that you can concentrate your mind more upon Krishna, especially when you're older. So you don't die in some bed or in some hospital with everyone crying around you. So you go to hell. You go into the forest where you can actually make spiritual progress. Now, at that particular stage, generally speaking, the kings, they already had a grown-up son who took over the family, took over the kingdom. They weren't really needed anymore. And the wife would go and live with the children and teach them renunciation too. So there was a natural, the aim of life was spiritual progress, not to die comfortably in a bed, surrounded by your crying relatives. There was a different understanding of what life was meant for. And therefore it was expected at a certain age people would take vanaprastha. Especially the kings had to, because they were so attached, they had so much opulence. It was very easy to become attached to something. I mean, we become attached to our pillow. We go to the forest, we'll take our pillow with us. What to speak of, you had a kingdom which was like the size of the whole world. How much attached you'd get. So they had to practically give up these attachments by going to the forest. So they could actually think about Krishna rather than lament about the things we were going to lose when they were going to leave their body. Better to leave the things behind while you're still alive and concentrate on Krishna rather than to wait to the moment of death and see if you're attached or not. You will be attached unless you practice detachment. Anything else? But it's not that everyone, you know, I just got married, you know, and I don't like my wife, maybe I should leave. That's what Prabhupada thought like that too. Actually, Prabhupada thought, I don't like my wife, maybe I should get another one. Because that time you could have two. And Prabhupada's father said, no, that's good that you don't like your wife. Because then when, you know, you get older and it's time for renunciation, then you'll be able to give her up, otherwise you might get too attached. But what the idea was, He didn't like his wife, but still he was there. He had 5 or 6 children, and he did his duty up to a certain point. But when it was time for vanaprastha, then he took vanaprastha. Anything else? Thank you very much. Krandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.